You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast, your show for everything Butler basketball. Hoopcast! Episode 6 of the Front Row Hoopcast, your show for everything Butler basketball. I'm Ari Castle. BK, Brendan King, is with us as always.
Well, for a couple more weeks.
For a couple more weeks, and then we're going to have to change the schedule up a little bit. And Tomich will be back, so it'll keep it in line.
We'll make sure. We'll bring the content to you.
The Bulldogs, the toughest stretch of their Big East schedule is over, thankfully. You know, 4 ranked teams and 4 appearances. It was a good start for the Bulldogs in conference play, starting out 2-0, wins over Georgetown and Villanova. Dropped 3 straight, though. It was an encouraging start, but kind of a sad finish, BK.
I think if they were 2-3 without the losing streak, I think people would be all right with it. I think the losing streak makes it a little bit more, not depressing, but just like, dang, we're on a 3-game losing streak with a tough game against Marquette coming up at home.
It also feels like to me that we probably should have beaten Seton Hall.
Oh, no. They should have, but Angel Delgado said no.
Yeah. Let's talk about that right now. It was one of those games where we had talked about this the episode before. They were a tough team coming in, and with a lead like that, you really can't afford to lose that game. And Butler's calling card over the years is that they've been able to close out tight games like that, and this is one of those times they couldn't get it done, and it's really disappointing.
And you know, I love the Butler fan base, but you know, when you get on Twitter and you say, "Oh man, you know, cream in Seton Hall or easy win," I mean, like, you knew that that team was going to come back, just like you knew that Villanova was going to make a run, and they did, but Butler held on. But you knew that Seton Hall was going to make a run. You can't keep Kadeem Carrington and Desi Rodriguez off the stat sheet for an entire
That's
half.
Exactly what you said the previous episode, and they lit us up.
Those two guys.
Delgado,
And then you bring in Delgado for the third, and you have guys like Sanogo. You have plenty other guys off the bench. I mean, Powell came in and made that ridiculous corner three out of nowhere. But when you combine those three guys with the bench that they have, I think we just saw the top three or top four of what the Big East is going to finish this year. Nova, Xavier, Creighton, Seton Hall. Not in that order necessarily.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Butler fans on Twitter tweeting about, you know, running over Seton Hall. See, I had another gripe with Butler fans on Twitter, and this is one of my biggest...
Not that I'm I love the passion, but
no,
like...
So do I. Yeah, so do I. But one of my things that I cannot stand is when people blame referees for losses. And I was getting tweets about this last night. And
I didn't see that.
Here's my thing. I can tell instantly whether or not you understand basketball if you start blaming the refs for games, because that clearly shows me you don't understand the game. Okay, let's be real here. I understand Butler fans tweet at the refs because they feel like we're sticking up for our team. There's an injustice. We're going up against them. But I'll tell you this. Guys, listen to me. It comes across like being a whiny brat who didn't get their way and is now complaining about everybody else. It makes us look stupid as a fan base. And yes, there were bad calls in that game, and yes, there are bad calls going both ways, but the idea to think that there's this conspiracy that the refs have it out for one team is utterly ridiculous. I can tell instantly fans who tweet have never played the game or coached the game when they start blaming refs for losses. It drives me nuts, Brendan.
I'm going to stop you there for just a second, but I think there have been situations in the past 4 years where there have been games that have been determined by one call. I think that has happened in the past few years where there have been games.
In college basketball, very, very, very rarely. Very, very rarely.
Yeah, yes, but I think you're correct in saying, like, sometimes you just got to say that Butler messed up. Butler messed up in the Seton Hall game by allowing them to come back from, what was it, 17?
Yeah.
Okay. But I think there have been games here in the Big East that have been determined by 2 or 3 calls in the past.
I don't agree with that wholeheartedly, but I'll say this. I do not think the refs lost us that game.
No, no.
Did the refs hit 7 threes against us, or was that Kadeem Carrington?
It was Kadeem
Carrington.
Did
the refs get 6 offensive rebounds in clutch time, or was that Angel Delgado?
That was Angel Delgado.
I love Butler fans, and I love, you know, it's okay to be a homer. But it's sometimes, I think guys tweeting at the Big East saying your refs suck makes us look so unintelligent as a fan base.
That's not good.
And it's not like the social media team for the Big East is like reporting that over to the refs association. Yeah. So just cool down with that.
And I mean, yeah, maybe complaining about the refs might make you feel a little bit better if you're a fan by saying, oh, you know what, that was on them. But at some point, look, your next 3 games are Marquette, Providence, and DePaul, and as much as you'd like to think those are a little easier?
No, sir.
Marquette just walked over Seton Hall at home.
We talked
about 20.
Yes. Top to bottom, this league is tough. You cannot walk into a game.
We had some guy, look, I respect the guy's opinion on Twitter, but he said the Big 12 conference is the best overall conference in basketball. Okay, it's a very good conference with Trae Young in Oklahoma, but you find me another conference where top to bottom, anybody could come in and wax you by 20? No way.
Yeah, I don't think so either. No way. BK, we lost last night to Creighton as well. A tale of two halves. It seems to be a common theme with
Butler. I like your Mr. Hyde or Dr. Jekyll.
It's a, you know, Georgetown we were getting whooped in the first half. Villanova we were cooking in the first half, kind of slipped up. It's one of those things we've talked about, consistency. Again, where when Butler's on, they're on. And when they're off, they're off. And I want to give credit to Paul Jorgensen. And I know I rag on him a lot. But one thing I actually do really like about him is that he's always going full throttle. He's always putting forth effort. There's some guys on our team who kind of coast every now and then. One thing I do like about Paul is that he's always going. And whether or not I agree with his shot selection or whatnot, I do appreciate the fact that he's one of the few guys who's constantly going 100%.
Look, somebody's got to be aggressive. And if it's not going to be your guards immediately, Paul's got to step up.
I actually thought he played well yesterday.
I did. To be fair, I think that place in Omaha is the hardest place to play in the Big East.
For Butler especially.
In general. Yeah, oh, yeah. No, dude. That environment looks...
On dollar beer night as
well?
Oh,
Steve Lavin loving it. Did you see that?
Yes.
I think that's the toughest play to play in the league. I'm not blaming the loss on that whatsoever, but damn, that student section looked fun. That fan base looked a lot of fun. And I respect Greg McDermott a lot. I think he's a great coach, even though it is his fault that Ohio State, did what they did.
It's funny you mentioned that. We'll get into this later, but we'll get into it later. Let's stick with Butler.
But no, I think he's a fantastic coach, and he's doing great things at Creighton. But look, somebody's got to be aggressive, and the fact that last night Aaron Thompson was being guarded by a 6'8 monster with 1 foot in the paint while Aaron was in the corner. We're going to bring this up a little bit later.
No, let's do it now.
I'm sorry, but that doesn't work where the entire defense of the other team is on one half of the half court while Aaron Thompson hangs out in the corner and gets the ball and then drives to the paint and then passes off for a kick out. That doesn't work.
You had texted me something interesting earlier in the week. You said, a topic for the show maybe, what about Badley or McDermott come in to start over Thompson? And are you still kind of on that?
Yes. In the second episode, who said that Henry Badley needed to step up?
I think we both did.
No, I brought that up first.
Okay, yes, but he's also stepping up in ways we didn't expect.
Yeah, that's true.
We said he was going to be a driver and a defensive...
And a slasher,
and he's not, but you think that Thompson needs to head to the bench with one of those?
It's just the start last night was what put them in the dust. I mean, that first half, even though Butler's a second half team, that first half just did not look good. And again, if you're going to have Thompson being guarded by a 4 or a 5 who has 1 foot in the paint at all times and kind of looks over his shoulder and says, oh, he's still there, that's okay. And then Thompson gets the ball to drive and just kick out. It's so predictable.
Because I was all in with you on that. I thought about it a little bit, though. And here's kind of where I'm at with this, is that I think Thompson actually, having him start right now is fine, and I'll tell you why. I think moving him off the bench or to that sixth man role doesn't make a lot of sense, because a sixth man, you kind of want someone to come in and bring energy and bring some offense. And if you're bringing Thompson off the bench, it really doesn't give you anything. I think LaValle did a fine job of this the other night where, against Creighton, he started the game and kind of played it by ear. If Aaron started going, he left him in. But when he got a quick foul early, he got pulled out. If it wasn't working, that's fine. But it doesn't make much sense to bring him off the bench, because as a set sixth man, if you know you're down by 10 points early in the game and you're bringing him in, that's really not a good spot. He's more of a situational player where, depending on how the game goes, is where you go with him. But it's fine.
But if you're a situational player, do you deserve to be in the starting five?
At this point, the situation hasn't developed yet, really. So you start off and see how the game is going.
But, like, we can't keep saying that. I mean, we're in January. We can't see, we'll see how it goes. Like, you got to start really taking on this thing.
Well, yeah, I agree. But I also think that we also have so few ball handlers on the team that I think having Aaron in for the first, you know, couple minutes to see how things are going, you're not going to lose the game in those first couple minutes.
He got pulled after 2.5 minutes.
I'm saying Lavelle recognized that things weren't working. He needed some offense in there, which, you know, credit to Lavelle.
Yeah, no, it was
but
good.
I think that Aaron off the bench, unless it's the situation where you solely need defense, you're really not going to bring him off the bench for that. I think bringing off McDermott and Bagley, who are scoring really well right now, makes a lot more sense to me.
That's fair.
Let's talk about Bagley.
Let's talk about Henry. I mean, 9 points a game in his past 6 games. Looking good. The 3 balls going in. Looks like the Lonzo Ball type of shot that he's taking. But 85% from the line if he can get to the bucket. I mean, he's stepping into his own. I think he looks... I don't think he looked comfortable at all last year. I think he's comfortable. And that can go a long way.
I think it's one of those things where we said, I did not expect Henry Bagley at all to be the scorer. I expected him, when we said step up, I meant, you know, maybe come in, hit a couple breakaway dunks, some layups, drive to the rim and rebound and play defense well. Never in a million years did I imagine he'd be hitting, 10 points against Villanova and hitting threes against Seton Hall like that.
Yeah.
It came out of nowhere, and it's one of those things where maybe it's because his jumper just looks so funky. I don't fully trust it yet, but at the same time, he understands his role is shoot the open three. Don't try to create. He's not going to do a Paul Jorgensen step back three. No. He's going to sit there and wait and understand his role. I do think he needs to rebound better because he's averaging something like under 2 rebounds a game right now. It's 6'6 with those bunnies in his shoes.
Yeah.
So step that up a little bit. But he's exceeding expectations.
Did you know he's Butler's best free throw shooter overall, 90%?
How many free throws has he shot?
22.
All right.
20 out of 22.
All right.
That's pretty damn good.
Hey, that's not bad at all. I give credit to him. Another guy who I've been impressed with lately is Nate Fowler.
Yeah.
I actually think this might sound a little crazy that we should start running more stuff to him because down low in the post, he's proven that he can get to the bucket and lay it in with pretty high efficiency.
He gets swatted a lot.
No, not a lot.
At the bucket?
There's a couple plays where we feed it to him. He's shooting like 60% from the field this year.
You're a big boy. You got to go up and slam that down,
man. He's a little soft. That's
fine. You got to go slam that.
Was Andrew Smith?
Look, I'd love to be 7 foot tall and go up and do that.
Andrew Smith was the same way. He wasn't a guy who was going to show you up and dunk the ball. He was going to beat you with fundamentals. And Nate, he's not shooting threes right now. He's kind of staying in the post. And he's rebounding better, too. His rebounding has doubled since he entered the
league. I know he said Chris Holtman liked him to shoot threes. I don't know if LaVale's kind of saying, you know, play a different type of game.
It's working right now. Yeah. I think one thing that separates Nate, especially from Weidman, is that he can shoot, but he hasn't shot a three yet in Big East play, which is a little weird to me, but, you know, it's I guess that's one of those things where I've got to trust the coach's decision on that.
So with Nate's minutes increased, I mean, at times he's playing more than Tyler Weidman.
I've noticed that.
Is this already going to be a wasted season for Joey Brunk?
I think at this point you have to look at it like that. And
because, I mean, he got the red shirt last year. I mean, this is a full year of eligibility that is gonna go away.
The good part is that he's still considered a freshman.
True.
Which I guess you can afford to burn another year. What's more concerning to me is that he hasn't earned the minutes. And I don't know whether that's because he hasn't proven it in practice or he doesn't understand the system or doesn't have the skill set.
I mean, he's sitting at the end of the bench with Campbell Donovan.
At this time, I have to trust the coaching staff with that, though. Like, if they don't think he's ready to go, as a fan, obviously we're biased. He's a hometown kid. We want him to do well. But clearly the coaches don't trust him enough to get in the game. And I'm not about to go against them on that.
No. I mean, they're at practice every day. They know what's going on. But, I mean, he got in for a couple minutes last night. But, you know, you never like to, for lack of a better term, I don't want to say waste, but, you know, throw away just a year of eligibility.
Yeah, especially, I'm with you. And, you know, I'm hopeful that I think next year is a big year for him,
especially
with Weidman leaving.
Yep.
So I think that's a big year.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll see what Hastings adds. Marquise Hastings, the recruit coming in, 6'7". You don't know what that 6'7 is going to be. It will be a 6'7 Keelan Martin or will be a 6'7 Andrew Schrabisch, completely two different players. You know, that's a big question mark coming
up. HoopCast is interviewing his head coach on Monday, him and Lamar Norman, so we should get some insight from that. Let's talk about recruiting a little bit, Brennan. I mentioned this to you. Purdue picked up Isaiah Thompson the other day, a recruit who was a Butler target, and I remember a few years ago when we were deciding between Brandon Miller and Lavelle, the reputation Lavelle had was as this recruiter, And he's done a great job of identifying prospects so far, like before anyone else had, like Aaron Henry, Miller Kopp, Jackson Hayes, Morris Udeze, struck out on all of them. And I think it's great he can identify guys, but I think that, you know, you got to be able to close. And it's, I'm getting a little concerned that we've missed out on so many guys. We've closed, you know, Hastings and Michael Malloy, but I also feel like those weren't our top options. So I want to know what points is recruiting going to, you know, step up?
The transfer wire this summer is going to be what kind of says it to me, because you're going to need one, if not two, transfers to come in here.
I would agree.
I'm not saying they have to be Keithan Savage. I'm not saying they have to be Tyler Lewis. But you're going to need one or two capable guys to come in here, even Paul Jorgensen level, and be able to get into the Big East and throw their bodies around to get in this thing.
Because, I agree.
Because Xavier just got the Dartmouth kid,
Boudreaux. Evan Boudreaux, former Butler target,
who is very good. Xavier seems to be getting all the transfers, and that's not a good thing, because you add the transfers to Xavier along with their impressive freshman classes, they're going to be scary.
Well, they lose Blewett and McCura, which I like. But, yeah.
But you look at their bench.
I agree. The last thing I want to talk about, we teased this earlier, a little morsel tease, is that we talked about Holtmann, and his squad beat number one Michigan State this past week. And I texted you, and I said, why are fans mad at Holtmann and not mad at Barry Collier? Because in my opinion, I think Barry dropped the ball.
Really?
I really do.
I disagree.
He let a top coach walk away. If you want Butler to step up into the elite, to the big time, you have to pay a coach. Period.
Look, Barry is not the... All right, so I'm going to pull an analogy here. We got the old Chase Tower just to the left of us here. Now it's called the Salesforce Tower. But you have the old Chase Tower right there. Barry Collier is not the Chase Tower of Butler University. That is James Danko, the president of the university. He is the Chase Tower. He's the bank. He's the monopoly. He makes the calls on the cash. He sets the tuition. He sets the prices of everything. Look, Holtmann walked away. I love Lavelle Jordan. I think he's a great replacement. He has a number one win, as does Chris Holtmann this year, okay? But Barry Collier is the Emmis Tower
of Butler.
James Danko is the Chase Tower with the money.
At the same time, though,
the Emmis Tower that we're in right now is not as big as what's right there. James Danko overrides Collier. He makes the final decision, and James Danko said Butler didn't have that cash.
I do not believe that for a second. No way, Jose.
I think Danko is the guy to look for in the cash rather than Collier.
Okay, well, I couldn't speak to that. I just know, in my opinion, I think Barry's, you know, we've hired good coaches in the past, but seriously, if you wanna establish your program as an elite, you have to keep a coach and you have to pay a coach. You look at Xavier. If they would have let Chris Mack walk, that program would be irrelevant right now. Butler's been incredibly, incredibly lucky that they went from Brad Stevens to Holtmann, you know, without any real issues, without really a huge drop-off.
1 year.
That is an anomaly. Seriously, I don't think Butler freelance realize how lucky they are. You can only get lucky for so long before it hits the fan.
I mean, you think about the transition from guys like Licklider to Stevens, too.
Yes.
Who the hell knew Brad Stevens, a guy that was selling stuff at Eli Lilly, come in and
I'll
now be
this,
the best coach in the NBA?
I did some research, Brendan. Okay. And according to Butler's 990 tax form, Holtmann was getting paid $1.362 million at
How
Butler.
How did you get that?
Sources.
Shut up.
Sources.
No way.
I swear it. It's actually true. I promise.
I sit on the other side of you.
I promise you. Okay. And I think that's a joke. A joke. And he left, you know, I think you have to pay up for a coach. And I think if Lavelle is as successful as we hope he is, he's going to need a payday too, or someone else is going to poach him. At what point do you say the buck stops here and we're going to pony up?
I mean, you and I both had 4 years of tuition go to the program. I mean, that's an easy $200K.
BK, Bulldogs end their losing streak against Marquette.
Brad Stevens never lost four games in a row as a Butler coach.
Interesting. So you're saying that the losing streak ends here?
Let's hope so. If I mean, I don't think a 4-game losing streak is something that Dogs fans have seen in a long, long time. Other than the Brandon Miller year.
I was going to say, we definitely did it.
It's been three.
All right. Well,
three
I think,
years.
You know.
That Hey, I'll tell you what, that Marquette game is tough. They just waxed Seton Hall by 20. Look, playing in this league, road or home, is tough. And that Rousey kid is lights out. I like him a lot. It's going to be a tough game.
Should be a fun one. We will see you next week, Brendan King.
Sounds good.
You Sucks, Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.